I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, Veterans Day, the 11th of November. Several weeks ago, we devoted an hour of our show to a discussion of domestic violence and football players. Since then, an extremely disturbing story broke about a much-beloved Canadian radio host, Gian Gameshi, host of Q. He's been fired, publicly accused of subjecting many women to violent assaults during sexual encounters. MIT has recently released a study of sexual assault on that campus, and we thought the topic should be visited again. Today, the discussion centers on consent, respect, and sexual assault. We have as our guest this hour Mike Domish. He is founder of the Date Safe Project. He received a phone call in 1989 informing him that his sister had been raped. The news hit him hard, and he struggled with it for quite some time as the brother of a rape victim and also as a male. He transferred colleges to be closer to home and to his sister during the trial and did extensive research on the issue of sexual assault and dating. He started a program to open people's minds titled Can I Kiss You? And he has presented the program in schools, universities, communities, military installations, and conferences all over the world. He founded the Date Safe Project, and they create educational materials on consent, respect, sexual assault, and supporting survivors. Also edited Voices of Courage. Mike is the father of four boys, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for him during the course of this hour. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, where if you'd like us, we'll send you updates of shows that we will be having is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Mike, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Kathleen.
Yeah, our pleasure. So let's go back to 1989. You received a phone call informing you that your sister had been raped, and the news really hit you hard.
I was shocked. You know, you when you get a phone call like that, you don't know what you're going to do until it happens. And I was angry. I was hurt, I was confused, and over the next few months, I would learn so much more about a topic that I knew nothing about at the time, because back then, you didn't hear about this in school. Mm-hmm. High schools didn't talk about it at all. Colleges rarely were discussing it, and so you had to learn on your own, and that's where it began, but it was inspired by the strength of my sister, the survivor, for her courage, her strength.
Why is it that, and I think this is even now a hard topic for us to talk about, witness the cases and the completely different points of view on whether people think sexual assault has been committed or something else, or whether it's part of a culture or not. People have a wide variety of viewpoints here, but we have been hesitant to talk about safe dating and all of these issues. Why? Why has it been such a taboo?
Well, unfortunately, there's a percentage of the culture out there that believes that if you talk about anything sexually related, that somehow that will suddenly inspire young individuals, teenagers, to engage in behaviors or to have thoughts they would not have thought before the moment you have the discussion. Now, all research shows that's not true at all, but that fear leads school systems to not being willing to having really fully open discussions and giving students skill sets to make more comprehensive decisions around sexual decision making, dating, and intimacy. And that's where this all comes down to. The heart of it is we want people to be having respectful, healthy, wonderful intimacy. And to do that, you need a skill set of knowing how to be able to communicate with your partner verbally, understanding your boundaries, your partner's boundaries, and to have that discussion. We need to be teaching younger people at a younger age how to declare their own boundaries, how to discover what their partner's boundaries are, what's age appropriate. We have to be having the conversations at a younger age, middle school for sure, definitely by high school.
Mm-hmm. So did you find it difficult to be welcomed into schools in 1990 when you started all of this?
Oh, my goodness. It was so much more difficult, and it's difficult now, but it was even way more difficult back then. And there was two reasons. One, I was a college student at the time when I started doing this work. And even though I was 20 years old, I looked like I was 16. So that made it a lot more difficult because people were going, who's this young kid that we're going to let talk to our students? So that was one part of it. The other part of it was nobody was having the conversation for the most part in middle schools and high schools. So they're like, we're not going to take on this conversation nobody's having for the first time when we're not even comfortable ourselves, the school, with how to discuss it. We're not going to bring somebody in from the outside. So that made it difficult. And still today, those are some of the barriers that are there as far as schools thinking, well, I don't know that we want to bring this in, this topic, because we're not even comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. That tells you how far we have to go as a society to get to a place where we can really have open, respectful conversations.
I was interested in the MIT report that just came out at the end of October looking at sexual assault and harassment on campus. The chancellor of MIT said there is confusion among some of our students about what constitutes sexual assault. We don't even know what it is.
And that's true around our country. That's not MIT exclusive, that's for sure. And I'll give you an example. A lot of times nowadays you'll hear people use the term, there's a rape culture. And some people become very offended by that and say, that's so untrue, that's not fair, here's why. One way I present it is this way. If you don't think there's a rape culture, consider the possibility there is a culture of sexual assault. Because when people hear rape, they tend to think about somebody jumping out from the bushes. They think of the stranger attack. They think of physical violence. And what they don't picture is the scene that happens that starts at a party, that starts at a bar or a club between two people who do know each other or have gotten to know each other that night. They don't consider that. They don't consider their partner pressuring them into something they don't want to do on Friday night as rape. But when you do talk about sexual assault, they think, well, that's sexual contact without consent. That they get. And you go, all right, well, if we understand that sexual assault is sexual contact without consent, when you're on a date or when you're intimate with your partner, how do you get consent? And they say, well, you know, you just know. Well, no, how do you actually receive it? Well, you just know. So in other words, you're not receiving consent. You're guessing and assuming consent. And they're like, well, I guess. And that's where the whole problem begins. Mm-hmm. We're not giving anybody the skill set how to verbally talk about sexual intimacy. Therefore, they don't ask and they make assumptions. Suddenly, they're just touching somebody, assuming the person wants it. Now you have sexual contact without consent. Mm-hmm. That's a fourth in Wisconsin. That's a fourth degree sexual assault.
So how do you ask for consent? How should the conversation take place?
Well, you know, it's the neat thing about that question is when you teach students and you talk to them of any age, by the way, whether they are 15 years old or whether you're talking to a 55-year-old in the military and you say, would you ask somebody for a kiss? Most people go, well, that seems sort of dorky. Until they see it done. People want to see an example. When they see it, they go, oh, I get that. So the example that we role play when we're on a stage or doing a session for the military is we have two people on stage. They're sitting right next to each other. They're having a great time. They imagine they're all alone on a date. You look your partner right in the eyes, and you say, have you had a great time tonight? And your partner says, yeah, I've had a great time. And you look that person right back in the eyes and say, you know what? I would love to give you a kiss. May I kiss you? And when you do this live in front of the audience is like, oh, my gosh, that would so work. If you really were looking them in the eyes, and regardless of gender, sexual orientation, people love it because they go, that's so much easier, ironically, than the way we've been taught. Because it's sincere, it's passionate, you're looking somebody in the eyes. And if somebody out there is going, well, that just seems dorky. Not if you have a connection. The only way that asking ruins a moment is if you never had a moment in the first place. And so you're blaming the asking when really it's the fact you never had a connection.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it? It's something that seems simple in a way, and yet the way you describe it, it's also fairly profound. And I'm wondering how often that even happens. I'll bet it's not very often, Mike.
Well, and that's the neat thing, that when you teach it, students and adults want to implement it. Like, they want to go home and say, I'm going to try this tonight. It's amazing how many will text us and say, tonight I'm going to go home and ask my wife. Tonight I'm going to ask my husband. Tonight I'm going to go home and ask my girlfriend, my boyfriend, my partner. It's incredible. They want to do the right thing. It's just what you just said there before. Such a simple concept has never been taught in a way that they can use it. See, what we usually do is we say to people, ask first. That's what our society does, but nobody teaches them an example of how. So they assume worst case scenario. They assume the dork, the uncomfortableness. We've got to show people this is the way you do this. And it's very simple, as you said. It comes when they're in the audience, they're like, wow, that was totally shifted my paradigm. It's a profound moment for them, yet it's a very simple concept.
Mm-hmm. And what about those instances where people don't ask and may be rather aggressive in their decision to just sort of take matters into their own hands and kiss and maybe even go beyond that?
Well, and that's what you'd be describing if you walked into the average group of college students and said, how's somebody how does somebody sexually engage with their partner? They'd be what you exactly described. Hmm. One person's more assertive, and they begin to sexually engage with this other person, and they keep going until they hear a no. And so this is very assertive. And when you say that out loud, people go, wait a second. So going for it means that I'm going to sexually touch you until you stop me or give me a signal of no. And they're like, yeah, that's what it means. Do we hear how predatorial that is? I'm going to do something to your body until you stop me.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you say that, people go, that's really messed up. That's crazy that we do that. Because that is, if I just sexually touch somebody without their consent, that is sexual assault. But this is the piece that's missing. Most of our culture says, well, isn't that just dating? And so they don't recognize sexual assault when it's happening. And people go, well, if that's sexual assault, then almost everybody's been involved in a sexual assault. Of which we answer, that's why we need to be having these conversations,
mm-hmm.
to creating healthier situations, more respectful situations.
Why do we have so many situations that are not respectful?
Because we're not giving the skill set. It goes back to, if you've never been taught how to do something the right way, you assume what you're currently doing is the right way. Because you don't know what's not right about what you're doing. You've never been, the mirror's never been put up in front of you to show you what you're doing, how you're treating this person, how there's a lack of understanding or respect for that person's boundaries, or simply what they want. Like, you could be engaging in sexual behavior that they don't even want, but because nobody's talking about it, it continues to advance. And a person deserves to have a choice in that. A simple question we'll ask parents, because parents will be like, you know, I don't know if I'm comfortable having this conversation. And I'll say, we'll make it easy. Do you hope that your child, when they get old enough to engage in sexual behaviors, whether it be in their teens or older, do you hope that they always have a choice before somebody sexually touches them or engages with them? Every parent says, of course I do.
Right.
So how are you teaching your child to ask their partner and give them a choice? How are you teaching your child they deserve to be asked so that they always have that choice? To say you want your child to be respected but then never give children the skills to be respected and to respect their partners makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. What about for those who have already experienced unwanted sexual contact and sometimes really dangerous rape situations? The MIT study was interesting in that they said that only 5% of those who responded here had reported this unwanted sexual contact to any campus official. More than half said they didn't think it was serious enough to report. And nearly half also said that they thought that they were partly at fault.
And none of that is uncommon. And here's why. When you see a sexual assault case occur amongst two people who seem to know each other or met that night. So in other words, not a stranger in the park or in the alley, when it's not one of those cases. And we would call it a non-stranger sexual assault, where you met that person or you knew them previously. What will happen when you see that in the news, when a celebrity's involved, almost every major case we've watched over the past 20 years where a celebrity's involved in a sexual assault, what have we watched happen to the person who came forward as the survivor?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens to culture is people go, I don't necessarily want to put myself through what that survivor was just treated like by the media. I don't want my friends to do that to me. I don't want my peer group to do that to me. And it can be very difficult for many survivors to come forward because of the fear of how people will judge them or treat them differently. It's also why we need to change the way we have these conversations. We need to teach parents and teachers and loved ones how to help your loved ones come forward if they ever have been sexually assaulted in a way that they're going to feel supported and they're going to feel safe and not judged. Those are really key elements.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that in the MIT survey, I think they showed, 5% of students reported, 5% of those who were sexually assaulted. That's where our country's got to stop and go, hey, we need to change something here. We have a major crime where the victim rarely comes forward. We have to figure out a way to support that survivor and help them through that process of healing and moving forward.
Did your sister feel as though she was supported?
My sister Sherry, yeah. So Sherry, in Sherry's case, was provided the opportunity to talk with counseling right away and was very much, she has written about this in the book Voices of Courage, felt the support of her family and friends. Her loved ones were there. Here's the thing, though, that I think is very important. Sherry inspired us. For those of us who, when the case happened and saw Sherry's strength and courage, that's what inspired us to, you know, you want to be there for that person automatically because you love them and you care for them. And then you see the strength inside the survivor themselves, and you want to be there for them that much more. You want to speak out that much more. You don't want this to happen to somebody. Sherry is the reason, the whole reason I began doing this work. And as we've traveled the world doing the work, we continue to meet more amazing survivors who continue to show that strength and that courage that's inside every survivor. It's a matter of getting them the right resources, letting them know about the local sexual assault crisis center, letting them know about the state coalition. Wisconsin's got one of the best coalitions in the country, the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault, letting people know their options and their resources.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting in all of these cases that we've got, you know, football teams and radio stations and colleges and universities who want to keep their reputations intact and are not being really open about this. It might be helpful if people were, and with the football scandals, I think people for a while did become more open about all of this subject. You would hope that everybody would be very open and let people know what happened, and if anybody was to blame, you know, at a higher level, that they should take responsibility for it. If we were open about discussing it, maybe things would be different.
Well, recent legislation on Title IX has actually made it so that Title IX is starting to take this issue over on college campuses, become the office that is responsible for handling the culture on campus regarding sexual assault. Mm. Because of that, there are now specific people looking at the culture of every campus on their campus saying, are we creating a culture that is safe for survivors? And this is happening universally across the country for the first time ever universally. There are campuses that were doing it before, but now it's happening unilaterally. And because of that, we're starting already this year to see changes on the way college campuses are handling and addressing sexual assault, which is a positive change. Here's the thing. It really has nothing to do with football or an athlete. Campuses had a history. Some did. Of keeping this within their internal system.
Right.
And that was the whole problem, right? If any other crime happened on that campus, it would never have stayed internally, any major felony. If somebody was shot, the local police would have been involved and the local authorities would have been involved and that judicial process. If somebody had been hurt in a way that was a felony crime, it would have taken outside the university police. Typically, it would have involved, it was a major crime. We would have heard about it because the local police would have been involved in authorities. With sexual assault, what was happening on some campuses was they would say, well, you know what, there is a local crisis center, but just so you know, we can take care of this over here for you. And we would literally go into universities or hear from universities where the local sexual assault crisis center rarely heard from the university. They were not using them as an outside resource that could say, hey, students, if you're not comfortable coming to us, here's your other resource. Now, we're grateful. Most of the universities we work with, they're the opposite of that. They're the universities who say, we care deeply about our students, and if you're a student on our campus and you don't feel comfortable coming to us, know there's these resources too. Know that there is your local crisis center. And you can go both internally for a judicial process on campus, and you can work with the local authorities. It doesn't have to be one or the other. This can be pursued down all avenues to bring you full justice and closure.
Mm-hmm. And the other part of this, which is so important, imagine how things might be different if we had the kinds of conversations that you outlined at the beginning of our conversation. If we talked about how to treat people with respect, how to ask permission, what a different world it might be.
That's right. Because now when two people sit down, let's say there was a sexual assault case and they sat down and it used to be, well, you know, did you have consent? And the person would say, yeah, I had consent. And they would say, okay. They turn to the survivor and say, did you say no? And put it all on the survivor to prove it. And now where the conversation's changing is they're going, you had consent? How? How did you get consent? Since you were the one who was the assertive one, you took the initiative, how did you receive consent? Because the onus is on you if you're doing the touching, which is fair. That's reasonable. And that's where the paradigm shift is starting to take place. People are starting to realize if somebody touches somebody, they must be responsible for their touch. And so that conversation is now taking hold, which is good. That's a positive change.
Mike Domish is our guest this hour. He is founder of the Date Safe Project. And we're talking about getting consent, about respectful relationships, about why it is that we, you know, when you think about it, we haven't had these conversations. We all think about it with our teenagers and middle school students as they become sexually active. What kinds of conversations do we have about this very thing that we're discussing? He has been involved in a program titled Can I Kiss You, which has been presented in schools, universities, military installations, conferences all over the world. He's also author of a couple other books, and we're welcoming phone calls for him. How should we teach the issue of respectful sex, of consent? Why aren't we? Why is this an issue that colleges and universities and so many places have a hard time having? Why does everybody want to make sure that their reputations are intact instead of looking at this very serious issue? Would it be different if we had courses all over Can I Kiss You and taught people about respect and consent? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter, at K Dunn Show. Mike has been doing this kind of work since 1990. His sister was raped in 1989, and he thought long and hard about what that meant, what it meant as a brother of a rape victim and also as a male. He did research on the issue of sexual assault and dating. He founded the Date Safe Project in 2003, and they create educational materials on consent, respect, sexual assault, and also supporting survivors. To you in a moment, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, this Veterans Day, Armistice Day, the author of War Dogs, Tales of Canine Heroism, History, and Love, Rebecca Frankel, will be joining us. She looks at the role of dogs in war, which goes back quite some time, and she spends time with the handlers, the trainers of these dogs, and writes about the remarkable relationship that exists not only with the soldier, but also at times with the soldier's family and other soldiers. All right, let's go to phone calls for Mike, and we start with Myrna in Madison. Hi, Myrna. Hello, are you there? All right, let's go to Jay in Stevens Point. Hi, Jay.
Kathleen, Mike, hello. Thanks for having this conversation.
Thank you, Jay.
My question is, when does asking become harassment? Because, you know, history is full of stories of guys that win the girl by persisting. And, you know, sometimes it seems like women judge a guy's figure and vitality by how much they want her.
Jay, it's a great question, and what you just brought up is something that our society unfortunately does teach typically males to do, which is to persist past a no, which is teaching disrespect. And it's built into the system, and then you're right, in doing so, they also teach some people that you should want that in a partner, which is insane. If you say no to somebody, they should honor it, and you shouldn't be turned on if they dishonor it and keep trying. That should be a sign that, wait a second, I said no, you're not honoring this. And if I really am interested in you, I don't want to play games. I want to be able to say, yes, I do. And that's part of what you do when you teach respectful intimacy. You teach people how to cut out all the games and to be honest, because respect is built in honesty. So neither person's ever going to play games in this case, because if you're really interested in someone, you know that if you say no, they're going to honor it. And if you say yes, they're going to honor that. And so because of that, you learn honesty. And you can feel safe in saying how you really feel. And that takes away all that kinds of ridiculous games that, you're right, people teach. And so now it's not harassment if you honor the answer, unless you do it in some incredibly disrespectful manner. So obviously we're teaching to do this with respect. But if you look somebody in the eye, you're on a date, and you say, I've had a great time, may I give you a kiss, that's not going to be harassment. Now, if that person says no, and you start going, well, why not? Why can't I? All right, with that stuff, people do already today, and that's not okay. And we want to eliminate that from that. Somebody says no to you when you ask for a kiss, the correct answer is, well, then I'm glad I asked. The last thing I want to do is make you feel uncomfortable.
Thanks, Jay, very much for the call. Let's go to Liz in Eau Claire. Hi, Liz.
Hi. I was just wondering, what the last caller said and what you're talking about, I think communication is the key in everything. But I was wondering, do you think that it's a bit more pervasive than just, you know, teaching your kids on in high school or on campus? I wonder the percentage of sexual assault that happens within the family home with married couples. And I will take the answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Liz. Mike.
Yeah, so Liz, this is an area we work directly with because we work with the U.S. military. And when you're working with the U.S. military, in the audience could be people who are 18 years old. There could be people who are 60 years old. There could be people who've been married 2 months, and there can be people who've been married 30 years. So we talk intensively about intimacy in marriage. And to give you a quick example, we'll say, all right, let's say that it's a single person. They're at a bar. Do you see people at bars try to give their partner a lot of drinks to try to hook up with them sexually that night? Audience will yell, yes, overwhelming. And then I'll pause and go, do married people do this to their spouses? And the room starts to laugh and go, yes. Which means a lot of the behaviors that we're saying, hey, college students, stop doing, have been in the society for so long that there a lot of people consider them part of their relationships, even though they're incredibly unhealthy and disrespectful. So Liz is right that this is integrated throughout all levels of relationships, all age groups, and that's why it's really important the younger we teach these skill sets. Middle school, we want to get at that core level, because if we can give them a foundation at an early age, we start to change this for future generations. People don't have to tolerate that kind of disrespect in their relationships, and it's not even that they're tolerating it. It's to know that this is wrong, and I can say that I don't want this in my life, and I can speak out about it.
Mm-hmm. I would assume that you would want parents to be able to discuss this freely. It notoriously has been a difficult issue, even though, you know, sexual innuendo is all over the TV. It's all over everything in our society. People have a very hard time in a family talking about this, but it's best that it not only be talked about at school, it should be talked about and exhibited, actually, consent and respect everywhere.
Well, Kathleen, you just said the key word. It needs to be exhibited. Right, so if I'm a parent, I come home and I say to my kids, you know what, you always deserve to have a choice. Your partner should ask you before they do anything with you, and you should ask your partner. And your child is sitting there thinking, I have never seen you ask mom or dad, depending on who it is having the conversation, for a kiss. And they may not say it out loud, but they know what they've seen. And so the more they can grow up seeing it, the more powerful it becomes. When we do parenting programs, we teach parents, hey, when you go home and you ask in front of your children, the first time you ask, they might freak out. You know, if you, in front of your kids, go, honey, may I give you a kiss?
Right.
And they're going to be like, oh, my gosh, you got to be kidding me. And that gives you a golden opportunity of learning, where you can pause and go, did that creep you out? And they'll be like, yes, that creeped me out. And you go, well, here's the shame. I should have been asking a long before now. Mm-hmm. Your mom is an amazing person, an incredible human being, and deserves to always have a choice just like you do. I realize I should have been making that clear through verbally asking and not making assumptions. You deserve the same thing. Suddenly you have this powerful conversation. And by the way, it has nothing to do with gender. Mom could be having the same conversation about mom's partner.
Right.
Or sexual orientation.
Yeah. Liz, thanks very much for the call. Myrna in Madison. Hi.
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 There's been a lot of discussion, I think probably for years, about the relationship between pornography and sexual assault, and more to the point, now with the internet, the easy availability of pornography. And I was wondering if the guest might comment on any relationship between pornography and sexual assault, in particular sexual assault on college campuses, and whether or not that creates a hostile environment. Thank you.
Pornography is now a larger industry profit-wise than Hollywood movies. And so it is that mainstream. So when people go, well, pornography, we don't need to have that discussion, it's literally making more money than Hollywood. So we need to be having this discussion. They say now the average child sees pornography by the age 11. And when you say that, people are like, what? There's no way. Well, think about it. They have a phone, an iPad, or a computer. They have instant access. And so you have to be able to have these conversations with your children about the impact of pornography. And we have this at the middle school level, if the school wants to have that conversation, all the way through the military level, and everybody agrees with what pornography does as an impact. It creates completely unrealistic expectations that are often based not on respect, but on dominance. And so that is can lead to people thinking it's my job to do that to my partner, to take over and control them, which then would lead you to a mentality of I'm going to dominate someone, which would be sexual assault. That's not healthy. It also leads to very unhealthy understandings of what mutually amazing sexual intimacy looks like. So what happens is suddenly an 18-year-old has this image of pornography being normal sex. Mm-hmm. They get with a partner. Their partner doesn't want that, and they think there's something wrong with their partner to try to pressure their partner. It's just a mess for many, many reasons, pornography and the impact it's having on people. People don't even feel good about their bodies after watching pornography because the bodies you see in pornography wouldn't even match 5% of our society of any gender, would not match 5%. It's having a lot of damage. So we need to have the conversations because it's out there. So you can't just say don't watch it, because even if you don't allow it in your home, your child could see it at a friend's house. They could see it literally on the playground on a phone. You need to give them a skill set that when they do see it, how are they going to comprehend it? How are they going to understand, is that realistic or is that fantasy?
Yeah. And it is a substantial difference. I mean, there used to be Dad's Playboy magazines, and they weren't very terrific in their treatment of women or portrayal of women. But now what young people are seeing, it's a really different world. I mean, it's really bad, some of it, really bad.
Yeah, it's absolutely, Kathleen. One of the things we say to parents, we say, here's how it's changed. It's always been there in some form or facet. But when our parents' generation or our generation, you had one of three magazines. And it doesn't matter what group of parents I'm in front of, everybody can name the three magazines. Everybody. And then you can say, and if it wasn't one of the three, you had one backup, and that was the National Geographic. And when I say that,
right,
the room loses it laughing because they know what I'm talking about.
Right.
They're like, yep, I did that. You know, or women will sometimes say a JCPenney catalog if I was wanted, or somebody's attracted to men will say maybe a catalog. But yeah, nowadays it's video.
Mm-hmm.
It's live action. That changes the whole parameter.
Yes.
Now it's not even their creativity of looking at a body in a disrespectful manner and then having thoughts. Now they're seeing disrespectful behavior. They're seeing dominance. And the more the mind sees something, the more it can grow in the mind. You know, you're seeding your brain. And so that's part of the danger.
Thanks, Myrna, for your call. Our number, by the way, is 800-486-8655. Mike Domish is our guest, and Mike is founder of the Date Safe Project. He is the editor of Voices of Courage. His sister, who is a survivor of rape, is one of the contributing authors to the book. He started all of this work after his sister was raped in 1989. Mike is now a dad, the father of four boys. We'll ask him in the time that we have remaining how he's raising his boys when it comes to having conversations about all of this. Our number again, 800-486-8655. How do you deal with this kind of conversation? What consent is? What respect is? Asking permission? Should we have it? Is it part of sex education in schools? Should it be? Should it be something that is discussed much more widely in our society? And then maybe we wouldn't have the kinds of problems that we have on university campuses where a rape culture has been said to exist, a sexual harassment culture, and where universities want to protect themselves because they don't want people to think that it's a dangerous place to be. And yet we keep hearing reports about violence, be it football players or Canadian radio hosts or all these reports that are just very, very disturbing. What can we do about that? That's what we're talking about this hour. And welcoming your phone calls. Again, 800-486-8655 is our number. Hour two of our program today, Rebecca Frankel will join us. Rebecca's been writing about war dogs since 2010 in her Friday column, Rebecca's War Dog of the Week for Foreign Policy. And her book has just become a bestseller. On this Veterans Day, Armistice Day, we talk about her book, War Dogs, Tales of Canine Heroism, History and Love. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mike Domish is our guest this hour. Mike, you're the father of four boys. How old are they, and what kinds of conversations do you have with them about consent, respect?
Well, they're all in their older teens, so 19, 18, 16, and 15.
Oh, my.
And so we have very open conversations, and that's what we need to be able to do. To think, what I always say to a parent is, what's your greatest fear about asking your child? Like, what question are you most afraid to ask your child? If there's a reason you're fearing the conversation, it probably means you need to be having the conversation.
Hmm.
And so we need to be as open as possible. In the end, your child is their own person, and they're going to make their own choices. So it's our job to give them as great of a foundation as possible, knowing that in the end, it's going to be their call on the choices they make in life. And that's one thing that's always in parents. Parents sometimes think, well, you know, if I don't have this conversation, they won't have these thoughts. They're a human being. And human beings have sexual feelings, urges, and thoughts. That's all natural, and it's all normal. And so you want to be able to give them the skill set for how to handle those feelings, how to address those thoughts when they're happening, how to be able to look at things. And then hopefully they'll make the right choice when they're in given situations.
Let's go to Kathy in Pleasant Prairie. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I must say, if I sound nervous, this is the first time I've ever gotten through on a radio show, but I'm glad I did because it's so very important to me. I am a survivor of familial rape as well as family friend rape when I was younger, and it always made me uncomfortable when I was younger, and not that this is the reason why, but that my parents, what they said was out of respect was to kiss the family members goodbye or kiss them hello or give them a kiss or things like that. I never, as a result of my background, my children, we always had an open relationship and an open conversation, still do as adults. We still talk about things because they're in relationships and stuff. But I don't like it when an adult forces a child to say, well, give her a kiss goodbye or give Aunt Kat a kiss goodbye. I don't think that that's appropriate, and I don't think it should start at teenage years. I think that it's okay for them to respect their bodies when they're younger and to be able to say, no, I'm not comfortable doing that. I don't think that has anything to do with the lack of respect for me as their aunt or their grandmother or whatever. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Well, Kathy, first of all, thank you for sharing your strength and your courage as a survivor. Individuals like you're a great example of a role model. You're getting on the radio and saying as a survivor, and that means a lot because for other survivors out there hearing your voice, it goes a long way. And as an example of you sound like somebody who's able to share and talk openly. And for some people, they think, I don't know that I could ever do that. So the fact that you called in and shared, thank you very much. And
you're
to
welcome.
The yeah, absolutely. And the point about kiss grandma, absolutely correct. So this is one of the discussions we have with parents. We say it starts at a very young age because here's what parents will do. They'll say to their children, nobody ever has the right to touch you without your permission. They do say that to young children. Then they'll show up at grandma's house that night and say, now kiss grandma. Kiss, go give grandma a kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And the little kid looks up like, I don't want to give grandma a kiss. And they're like, kiss grandma. And the kid could even be sarcastic and go, grandma smells. They'll be like, kiss grandma. And the lesson being taught is that if someone loves you, you kiss them. You express intimacy. And it's an awful lesson. And I made the mistake early on as a parent. And I remember once one of my kids wasn't moving towards grandma, like to give the kiss. And I'm like, now give grandma a kiss. And grandma said, no, if the child doesn't want to kiss me, I don't want them kissing me. And I had a wake-up call going, oh, my gosh, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but we do those things at such young ages and teach bad lessons. Yeah, a child should be able to say no. And you can say, if you know, I'm encouraging you to give grandma and grandpa a hug if you want to give them a hug. But if at the end the child doesn't want to give one, well, then you want to honor and respect that. Same with a parent.
That's
parents,
right.
If you're thinking, well, I'm going away for a week. Give me a kiss. No, I'm going away for a week. May I have a kiss?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going a week for may I have a hug? And if they say no, don't act all guilty and pouty because that's not respecting their answer.
Oh, right? Interesting. Kathy, did you feel as though you had somebody you could talk to when you underwent such violation?
No, I had nobody to talk to. It was in the 60s. she's passed away, so I'm not uncomfortable saying it was my mother. there was no one to talk to until I went and got help when I started having trouble. Depression and nightmares and things like that. So I went and got help, and I worked through it. Didn't have a chance to address it with her. Unfortunately, she passed away. I don't know that would have worked anyways, just knowing who my mother was. And it was a family friend that went over sleepovers, you know, and the family friend's father, you know. So I didn't have anybody to talk to. And I'm adamant about, you know, my children, you know, making sure that they had their voice. And, again, to this day as adults, I don't think, you know, I don't always agree with their choices and stuff like that, but they always have a voice. and and then included with their sexuality. And with my son, I raised him to think this is an art. To love somebody and to make love to somebody is an art. It's not about the anatomy. And I tried desperately to teach him that as best I could. I'm not a man, and I raised my children alone. But, you know, I did the best I could to make sure that it wasn't about, you know, body parts and connection and stuff. It's about head.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't want somebody to be violated, and I didn't want my children to be on the receiving end or to be giving either.
Right.
So did my best. Hopefully. But yeah, I didn't have anybody to reach to. But I always ask my daughter still. She's 26 years old, and I still check in to make sure she's okay and feel safe. Just because, you never
right,
know.
Right,
right. You
know? Yeah, so. I understand fully. Mike.
Well, thank you, Kathy, because when you mentioned the word that it's an art and how you treat somebody, I think that's really important. And I know you meant it this way, too, and that it's an art of respect.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an art of I'm going to make this painting and I'm going to be this wonderful painter. In other words, I'm going to be great at intimacy. It's that I want to create a mutually wonderful experience for both people if I'm going to get involved in this decision-making, because sexual decision-making has a lot of risk with it. So if you're going to take all the consequences, you do want it to be a wonderful experience for both people. And this is a big cultural shift for our country. When you look at a teenager, you look at people in their young 20s, even 30s or 40s if they're single, you'll have people saying, I'm going to go out this weekend to get some, which is very me-focused, and it's not about a mutually wonderful experience. We need to shift the culture from a get-some attitude to a mutually wonderful experience approach. When you do that, it's about two people. It's not about you or your gratification. It's about both of you having a wonderful experience together.
Right. Oh, Kathy, I'm glad you got through to this radio station. Thanks very much for calling. Our number is 800-486-8655. Mary in Madison. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, this topic is one that's really up for me right now, because my 18-year-old called me to tell me of what he got out of the movie Don Juan. And I'm slowly having conversations every night with him, it seems like lately, is realizing that he's coming out of what unfortunately was exposure to pornography at what I would think would be a pretty young age. I'm not quite sure exactly what that was, but it's probably been at least 5 years. And he has realized that it is hard for him to be with a regular girl, that he, you know, nowadays they don't just kiss you before they, you know, at the end of a date and good night, I hope I see you again. But it's, what do you want to do? You know? And it's just wide open. And I think that the girls are as confused as the guys, because they're exposed to thinking that they're exposed to some of this pornography. If not visually, in conversation, and they start to think that girls are, you know, having sex at parties, and they view certain things. They start to break down thinking, what is normal?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think both kids don't even know, and then even just picking up the phone and calling each other, it's all on text, it's all on emails.
Right.
You know, and my son just feels like, you know, sure, I'd like to just call her and ask her for a date, you know, and back up and just go out and get to know each other. But it's just really, really hard for both genders. You know, like I say, I think the girls don't always know where to stop, because they think you keep going.
Yeah.
They think that's normal. And so they held the reins for so long. And now that's broken down in our society, and not completely, but, you know, a lot more than it was. So that's my...
Mary, does,
you know, it's very sad.
Does your son feel comfortable? I mean, does anybody do this these days? Call up and say, hey, would you like to go to the movie with me?
No.
Or they don't do that.
The other person doesn't answer. They only answer through text.
Right, I know.
So, Mary, there's good news, Mary.
Teenagers don't call each other.
Hmm. The good news is there are people who are calling. And what's happening is when somebody is in the dating world, they put their current paradigm as the norm, and they say, because this is what I've experienced, this is all that's happening in the world. And that's all they know is their reality. The fact is, there are many people who have recognized that age group, who have recognized that just texting is not working, It's not bringing the kind of relationship they want. So when they meet somebody, they right off the start say, hey, look, when I'm with somebody or I want to be in a relationship, I want it to be real. So I want to be able to call instead of text and talk with you.
Right,
I want us to be
right.
able to, I want us to be able to go on a date and really get to know each other before we become intimate. Now, what he might find is that whoever that partner is out there, it might take a little longer to find that person. So then it's important for him to realize, but the gift of having a wonderful relationship is worth it. And so, yes, it might take me a little longer. I'll be patient because the gift is worth it. And that's really a key element. And all parents need to think about, hey, my kid said this is the only way it works. Well, that's because that's what they've seen. Give them the skill set so they can go out and create a new paradigm for themselves, a new possibility, and then be patient enough to allow that to take place because it just doesn't happen overnight.
And Mary, look at it this way. Your son is calling you. He's not texting you, right?
Yeah, that's true.
That's a good thing.
It's complicated. Yeah.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm on the same page. Thanks very much.
He's changing. He's growing. He's growing out of what he thought was there. And no amount of my trying to say, you know, this is not your basic what we did. You know, you want to see a naked body. I mean, that's not what it is. It's more than that. And it's way over the edge for anyone, even adults, I think. That's
just
me.
Yeah, no.
At least someone who's old enough to really have some formation in their head of what's real.
Right.
That's the bottom line for me.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary, very much for your call. Brad in Menominee Falls. Hi, Brad.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I just have one quick comment. It was regarding the caller, Kathy, that called in about the her experience with an assault that happened at a sleepover. And I just was talking to the screener, and I'll take my comment off air. But that's a great reminder why us parents are very careful when we start the sleepovers and always knowing who the parents are. And even then, that doesn't always stop. Things from happening, and she brought a very good situation to light, and I just wanted to tell her thanks for that.
Well, Brad, you do bring up something important, and that is, parents, there's nothing wrong with asking your kids, where are you going tonight? And if it is a party where they're going to be all night, or they're going to, especially if it's going to be anything of a sleepover, calling the families and saying, hey, our kid's coming over tonight. Are you going to be, you know, I know we understand each other and people, are you going to be there?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to be there, you know, we just like to know somebody's checking in. I'm amazed when we used to do, when and we still have kids that age, so we still would, when the son comes to us and asks us for that. But if they say, hey, I'm going over there for 5 hours tonight, that kind of a thing. Now, that wasn't a sleepover. It was just like we're going over there, you know, till curfew. And you would call the parent and say, just, you know, we heard our kid's coming over. Just want to make sure that's good. The parent would be like, oh, we're so glad you called. We're always surprised more parents don't call. So the host expects the call because they would want the same thing. Like, they're hosting it because they want their kid to be in a safe place. That's usually why the parent who's having the party is having it, because they want to make sure everybody's in a safe place. And by being in their own home, they can try to help that happen. Now, Brad also says something really important. That doesn't mean that everything's going to go okay because mom and dad are there. Kids are creative, right? And they can find ways to make things happen. And therefore, you still need your child to have a skill set of what if, you know, what if this? What if you go into the party and you see something that makes you uncomfortable? How do you get out of there without feeling you have to call them and say, pick me up? Do you have a code word that you could call and say, I forgot to do this, I'm sorry, and I know I was supposed to call you? So your friends look like you're just checking in with mom or dad over something you were supposed to check in on, but that tells mom or dad, go get them.
Yeah.
There's all different systems you can create to create safety nets for your children.
Thank you for the call. We have about a minute left. An email from a listener. Is this something that our state legislators are aware of? It seems that politicians mock the idea and degrade women who bring out this issue. I know that the White House has, and there's been a bipartisan group of senators asking colleges to have surveys like the one at MIT. Does government need to step in some way, Mike, or not?
We had a more clear definition across the board of what sexual assault was, because and it's their setup of our country. Every state has a right to make their own laws. Because of that, it can be confusing, because you're a child from Wisconsin, you go to school in Michigan, or you go somewhere, and the laws are different on sexual assault, and that impacts everybody. Every campus has a different approach, so that makes it more difficult. So what California has done is they've said, we're going to create legislation that's consistent for all of our campuses. so that we all survivors are being treated the same way. All judicial processes are the same. Mm-hmm. And that is very logical to do that. And those are, keep in mind, those are also sources getting state or federal aid, so they're able to have some say in what's happening.
Well, you were just, you've been a great guest. Thank you very, very much for being with us. It was so informative. And if people want to book you to come to their school or university, we'll let people know how to do that on Facebook. Thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you for having me on, Kathleen.
Yeah, our pleasure. Mike Domish, our guest, he is founder of the Date Safe Project. And help my teen is dating, real solutions to tough conversations. We'll have information on our Facebook page of more that he's written about. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. All right. Well, thank you, KP Whaley, for producing this hour. And thanks to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return and talk about war dogs. The second hour of our program on this Veterans Day, Armistice Day.